My name is Katie Kelso and I'm the solicitor in charge of care and protection at Legal Aid New South Wales. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land that I am on, land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and present. I also acknowledge the traditional owners of the land from which you are listening today. Today, I'm really honoured to be joined by Andrea Hathaway. Andrea is a lawyer at Legal Aid in a specialist team called the Children's Civil Law Service. CCLS provides civil law and youth casework assistance to highly disadvantaged young people aged between 10 and 19 years of age in Sydney who are in the criminal justice system. CCLS are a team with lawyers, a social worker, and an Aboriginal identified youth caseworker who all work together. Lots of the CCLS clients are in the out-of-home care system and they have a strong focus on issues that impact young people in care after they have been brought into care and the litigation has finished. Andrea, welcome. Can you briefly tell us about what you're going to talk to us about today?
Thanks, Katie. I also acknowledge that I'm on Gadigal land and pay my respects to elders past and present. Today I'm going to talk about leaving care plans. These plans provide assistance and support to young people who are leaving care up to the age of 25 years. I will also discuss legal claims that young people in care might have and how they are identified through a legal file audit. I will also briefly cover one important immigration issue for young people in care and young people accessing their care files.
So, Andrea, there might be a few people listening wondering, why is this relevant for me as a care and protection lawyer? Can you give us a few examples of why this is important for us to know?
Well, one example is you might appear for a child or young person who is in statutory out-of-home care in a Section 90 application where a guardianship order or restoration is proposed. It is important to understand that any such order may have an impact on the future financial support for that young person so that you can negotiate for further support in the care plan or seek an order where financial support is maintained. For example, the young person remains living with the parent but is PR to the minister. Another example is you might appear for a client in the Supreme Court in relation to a secure accommodation order. Knowledge of issues around leaving care are also important because, notwithstanding everything else going on, planning needs to happen for leaving care. A final example is that you might appear for a young parent whose child has been removed and who is themselves entitled to support as a care leaver. Being aware of and accessing this support may assist the parent in their care proceedings.
All incredibly relevant examples to the clients that we work with in the care and protection jurisdiction. So why is it important that young people leaving care have support?
Well, as we all know, turning 18, which is the age when many young people leave care, is a significant stage in developmental, emotional and social terms. For young people leaving out-of-home care, it can be a time with a lot of anxiety as they are facing this transition to adulthood, often without family support, often with significant extra barriers such as poor mental health and intellectual and physical disabilities, and often at a younger age than other children living with their families. They can be further disadvantaged through other factors such as the lack of affordable housing and high unemployment. A report by the New South Wales Ombudsman in 2013 found that only 22% of young people left care with an approved leaving care plan. Other key findings were that 5 months after leaving care, 19% of those young people still did not have a leaving care plan. And for the care leavers who were in juvenile justice detention in the 12 months before leaving care, the leaving care planning and support was inadequate. Leaving care in this context means the end of the court order allocating care responsibility, not necessarily leaving a foster care or other placement, but it can mean both at the same time, especially for young people in residential out-of-home care settings.
So, Andrea, we know why it's important, but what actually is a leaving care plan?
So the law is in sections 165 and 166 of the Children and Young Persons Care and Protection Act. The law requires the minister to provide or arrange for assistance for certain young people in statutory out-of-home care from when they leave care to the age of 25 years, as the minister considers necessary, having regard to their safety, welfare and well-being. Section 165, subsection 4, allows the minister to publish guidelines about the circumstances in which assistance may be granted under section 165. The guidelines are called Guidelines for the Provision of Assistance After Leaving Out of Home Care, and you can find the guidelines on the DCJ website. The guidelines recognise that universal services do not always provide enough assistance for those who have faced trauma, disadvantage, or isolation. The guidelines state all young people leaving care must have a leaving care plan developed by the agency managing their placement. Planning is to commence at 15 years of age and finish before the young person leaves care. The guidelines also state that the young person is to be involved in developing the plan along with parents, carers, and significant others. If the young person is unable or unwilling to participate, the plan is developed in consultation with those best placed to understand the young person's needs. The Act also requires the designated agency to implement the plan they prepared when the young person leaves out of home care. The guidelines state that to comply with this requirement and ensure the plan is successfully implemented, the agency responsible for supervising a young person's last placement is to offer follow-up support to the care leaver at regular intervals after their exit from care. Support for young people transitioning from care is also required under the National Standards for Out-of-Home Care, the New South Wales Child Safety Standards for Permanent Care, and the United Nations Guidelines for Alternative Care of Children. The Charter of Rights for Children and Young People in Out-of-Home Care in New South Wales also states that before leaving care, young people have the right to be involved in planning the kind of support and assistance they may need after leaving care.
Okay, so who is eligible for a leaving care plan?
So the ministerial guidelines published under Section 165 set out the eligibility for leaving care assistance. A young person is eligible for a leaving care plan if they fit the following criteria. They are 15 years or older when leaving care. The minister had PR immediately before leaving care, or they are otherwise a protected person. The minister had PR for at least 12 months altogether. The young person has not been adopted or placed on a guardianship order, and the young person is under the age of 25. It's important to note two things about eligibility. Firstly, the exception for exits to adoption and guardianship. And secondly, there is a ministerial discretion to provide assistance over 25 years of age in special circumstances.
Okay, so that's the eligibility, but when we're talking about these leaving care plans, what should we see within them?
So the legislation is quite general, but Section 165 subsection 2 says appropriate assistance may include provision of information, it may include counselling and support, and it may include financial assistance and assistance for obtaining accommodation, setting up house, education and training, finding employment, legal advice, and accessing health services. The guidelines set out the minimum requirements that a leaving care plan must consider, though assistance may not be required for each aspect. These include what's in Section 165 that I just mentioned, but also includes knowledge and understanding of personal history, including cultural background, contact with family members, independent living skills, including financial management, and obtaining a provisional driver's license. However, the plan should be personal to that young person, and as the guidelines state, plans are not generic but should be tailored. This includes identifying services and service providers appropriate to a care leaver of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander background or with an intellectual or physical disability. Beyond the minimum requirements, it's important to note that further assistance can be provided guided by an assessment of the young person's needs, their trauma history, current mental health, and their risk of not making a successful transition to independent living. The indicators informing that assessment are listed in the guidelines. Importantly, the guidelines include providing financial support where universal services will not meet the young person's needs and the support is needed to enable them to thrive. The guidelines include some standard payment amounts, for example, a regular aftercare allowance and one-off payments such as up to $1,660 for a young person to establish themselves in shared accommodation and up to $1,800 for education and training for course fees, books and materials. It's also important to be aware of the Transition to Independent Living Allowance, or TILA, T-I-L-A. This is the payment from the Commonwealth rather than the state government, and it's a one-off payment of up to $1,500 to assist eligible young people to cover basic costs when leaving out of home care. It has slightly different eligibility requirements, and they can be found on the Australian Government Department of Social Services website.
So quite a lot there. So we know how important they are. We know what they should look like and what should be in them. Talk to us about what you think our role as child representative in care proceedings should be.
So going back to the examples that I gave of where this is relevant for care lawyers, if you have a child or young person who may lose their care entitlements due to a proposed change in their care order, familiarise yourself with the ministerial guidelines, particularly the eligibility requirements for leaving care support and the types of support that can be provided, and be aware of it in your advocacy for a young person who may lose their entitlements. If you have a young person who is in secure accommodation and approaching the age of leaving care, be aware of their entitlements, including their right to participate in planning, and consider what extra support may be justified due to the young person's higher needs. If you have a parent client who is also a young care leaver, you can assist them to find out their own care status by contacting their last caseworker. You can contact the DCJ care leaver's phone number or email address available on their website. If the young person was in statutory out-of-home care and they are eligible, find out if the client has a leaving care plan and whether it has been approved. Assist the client to get a copy of it and advocate for the client if that plan doesn't meet their needs. The guidelines state that financial assistance after leaving care can include needs not identified until after the young person has left care. A care leaver becoming a parent would be a key example of a change in circumstances warranting the review and amendment of the leaving care plan. You can refer the client to an aftercare caseworker. DCJ and other NGOs providing case management of young people in out-of-home care have some in-house aftercare workers. There are also some additional specialist aftercare services listed on the DCJ website where the young person is unable or reluctant to obtain the support they need from the agency that managed their out-of-home care placement. There is one specialist Aboriginal aftercare statewide service. Whilst acknowledging different capacities of young people, where appropriate, you can encourage your client to access online resources for care leavers. For example, CREATE, which is the national body representing the voices of children and young people with an out-of-home care experience, have a resource called Go Your Own Way for care leavers. They have a website called Create Your Future and an app called Resolve to help young people with the transition to independence. There's also a website called You Child Story, created by DCJ, with aftercare resources. It's important to also be aware of specific resources and assistance for care leavers, like Safer Drivers course, which is usually $140, but is free for care leavers, and fee-free training for young people aged 18 to 30 who have previously been in out-of-home care. Finally, you can refer the client to CREATE or ABSEC, the New South Wales Aboriginal Child and Family Peak Organisation, if they want to be active themselves in the out-of-home care space, advocating for other young people. That won't be every client, but some clients do feel strongly about the issues and want to speak up and have a voice and create change.
Andrea, those are some really great and practical tips there for all of the legal representatives who work in the children's court. Can you tell us briefly about a client by the name of Annie and how her direct legal representative was able to make a difference in her life with her leaving care plan?
So Annie was 16 years old when FACTS brought a Section 90 application proposing guardianship orders for her long-term carer. Annie had been with her carers since she was only 18 months old. Final orders had been made at that time allocating PR to the minister. Annie was in a long-term and stable family placement, and she and her carer were keen to have that relationship legalised. The carer understood that the order would not substantially affect current arrangements. However, the DLR identified that a guardianship order could affect the following aspects of the family's current and future financial entitlement: teenage education payment, which is $6,000 a year for 16 and 17-year-olds, transition to independent living allowance, TILA, that we talked about earlier, aftercare services such as accommodation and employment assistance, and foster care payments for her carer. Negotiations led by the DLR successfully resulted in Annie's case being referred to the director, who approved all current and future payments and entitlements continuing regardless of the guardianship orders made.
Oh, that really is a good news story for Annie, isn't it? So we're now going to move on to legal claims or entitlements. Andrea, can you tell us, what is a legal file audit?
Yeah, so DCJ has an obligation to identify and pursue any legal claims or entitlements on behalf of a child or young person under the Minister's parental responsibility. A child who has experienced domestic violence, sexual abuse, or any other assault, which is obviously common for kids in care, may have entitlements to both financial compensation and free counselling under the Victims' Rights and Support Act. There may also be other legal actions, such as a civil claim, that the child or young person is entitled to commence. For instance, legal entitlements might arise from a motor vehicle accident, the death of a close family member, an allegation of abuse in care, or serious injury resulting from negligence. These potential entitlements can be identified through a legal audit of the young person's care files. These audits are usually done by a private lawyer paid for by DCJ.
Unfortunately for, as you've said, Andrea, the children that we deal with in the children's court, that's all too common for them. Which children are eligible for a legal audit?
Young people who are PR to the minister and have been in care for 2 years or more are eligible for a legal file audit. The legal file audit should occur when the legal entitlement is identified or where the young person ages out of care or exits care to guardianship or adoption. Caseworkers should refer files for legal file audit when a young person is 15 years of age as part of the leaving care plan process, but due to limited capacity, this often happens at 17 years of age. DCJ caseworkers or lawyers can refer for a legal audit during or at the completion of children's court proceedings, but only if a potential legal entitlement is identified.
So, Andrea, if a claim is identified in that legal audit, what happens then?
Well, it depends what the claim is that's been identified. Where there's a claim under the Victims' Rights and Support Act, DCJ will submit the claim on behalf of the young person. Where there are other civil law actions, DCJ will instruct the Crown Solicitor's Office to commence proceedings on behalf of the young person, with DCJ as the tutor or guardian ad litem if the young person is under 18 years. If the civil claim is against the state, for example, an allegation of abuse in care or serious injury from negligence, a letter is issued to the young person asking them to contact the Law Society to get referrals to a personal injury specialist firm, and there is a panel that the Law Society uses for these particular claims. A copy of the legal file audit is usually sent with this letter so that the young person has something to bring to the appointment with the private solicitor. And finally, an application is made to access records via the Care Leavers Access to Records Unit to assist the claim. Where there are legal claims that occurred interstate, DCJ will help arrange legal assistance. If the young person spent time interstate during their time in care, for example, they self-placed or travelled there with a carer or were placed there by DCJ, and there was an act of violence during that time arising on the files, this should be identified by the private lawyer, and DCJ will ask that lawyer, if they practice in that jurisdiction, or another lawyer to lodge any viable claims for victims' compensation.
So how can we as care lawyers help a care leaver with legal claims?
So often a young person will not know whether a legal audit has been undertaken. You can assist the client to find this out or refer them to a civil lawyer to do this. DCJ Legal cannot progress a legal file audit based on the request from a solicitor. The process is that the request must come from the caseworker and travel through the SIFDU to DCJ Legal. So if none has been undertaken, your best bet is to raise it with the young person's caseworker. Sometimes the file audit does not identify possible claims that the young person believed would be available to them. Where this is the case, you can help get the young person in touch with a civil lawyer and assist with a warm referral to ensure this information does not get lost.
Andrea, this is a tricky issue that Legal Aid's been grappling with quite recently. Can you talk us about legal issues that can arise for children in out-of-home care who are not Australian citizens or permanent residents?
Yeah, so many children in out-of-home care who are not Australian citizens or permanent residents may be able to obtain permanent residency by the time they reach adulthood, but only if FACTS takes the necessary steps to assist them to obtain a child visa. However, the child visa application using the vulnerable child provisions must be made before the child turns 18 or this opportunity will be lost. It is the objective of the vulnerable child visa category to provide a permanent visa to certain children who are in the care of a state or territory government welfare authority who would otherwise remain on a temporary visa or without any visa to remain in Australia. A failure by FACTS to obtain permanent residency for a child in care is likely to have significant ramifications for the rest of their lives, including, firstly, the loss of the opportunity to apply at all for a permanent visa. Secondly, it means ineligibility for government services like social security benefits, social housing, and disability support through the NDIS. In addition, if the young person is not eligible for social security benefits, this can limit their access as a care leaver to aftercare arrangements for accommodation. Finally, depending on their visa status when they arrived in Australia, their visa may have expired and they may be unlawful. Alternatively, they may have a temporary visa that is eventually cancelled due to criminal charges or convictions. In both of these situations, the young person can be taken to immigration detention and may eventually be deported to a country where they may have no connection or support. It's really important to be aware of and raise this issue when appearing in care proceedings for any child who was not born in Australia, particularly those who were born in New Zealand, where visa status can be overlooked. If the application is delayed, there's also a risk that the well-documented drift into the criminal justice system from the care system may mean that the young person does not satisfy the character test requirements for the child visa by the time the application is made. If the application is made at a younger age, then the young person may be a permanent resident or even a citizen by the time that they come before the criminal courts.
Wow, some really extreme consequences there where a visa isn't applied for, Andrea. Access to care records. Can you talk to us briefly about children accessing care records?
Yeah, so the Charter of Rights for Children and Young People in Out-of-Home Care states that children and young people have the right to ask for any information that's being kept about them, to read their file, and to add information to their file. Section 168 of the Children and Young Persons Care and Protection Act provides that children leaving care are entitled to have free access to personal information relating to them in any records kept by community services, the designated agency, and his or her authorised carers. Section 169 provides that on leaving or after having left out-of-home care, a person is entitled to possession, free of charge, of the originals of documents held in a file of personal information, including his or her birth certificate, school reports, medical reports, and personal photographs. Presumably this would also extend to other primary documents, such as an Australian citizen certificate and other immigration documents, and confirmation of Aboriginality. DCJ has a separate unit that manages requests from care leavers to access their personal records, known as the Care Leavers Record Access Unit, or CLARA. A care leaver must fill in an application form to seek access to their personal records, and it's online. Where a young person was case managed by an NGO, DCJ may not hold those records and the young person may need to contact that agency directly. If the agency that case managed a young person is no longer in existence, DCJ may have some of the records. It's extremely important to ensure that thought is given to the manner in which records are released to a young person. Young people who have experienced trauma can be triggered by reading certain information, and plenty of care must be given to the young person to support them in the process of reading their files. Under the legislation and the guidelines for care leavers, DCJ or the NGO must provide an appropriate person to support and assist the person seeking access to information at the time when they access that information. Aftercare services can also be used to assist a young person when making a CLARA application. Aftercare workers are also able to sit down with the young person and go through their records with them.
Wow, some really great information about really important issues for the children and young people that we work with in the care and protection jurisdiction. Now, if care lawyers are identifying these issues or other civil law issues in relation to children or young people that they represent, who should they get in touch with, Andrea?
Well, I'll just give a little plug here for civil lawyers. Accessing leaving care entitlements, legal file audits, and immigration law are just some of the areas of civil law relevant to young people in or leaving care. Other issues that may arise for your clients include unpaid fines, consumer debts, employment issues, police complaints, Centrelink issues, tenancy issues, and access to the NDIS. Your local community legal centre or Legal Aid New South Wales office should be able to assist with these type of civil law problems, and a warm referral is ideal for vulnerable clients.
Very good for all of the care and protection solicitors listening today to have that information. Thank you so much for joining us today, Andrea.
No worries, Katie.